Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
You know, you may have heard that a helicopter, or is it a drone, or something like a helicopter and a drone mixed in one...
It's got
one,
a couple blades on it.
...is going to fly on Mars. So that's a first. If you ask NASA, this is a moment that is up there with the first flight ever on Earth from the Wright brothers back in 1903. For the very first time, we're about to fly an aircraft on another planet. This is a big first.
It's at least 30 million miles away, so
that changes. Yeah.
So you can assume that there's some challenges involved, but what does it mean?
Yes.
How big is this?
So many questions. To get some answers, we are going to go to Ernst Haube. He is part of the German Aerospace Center.
Science Unscripted.
My name is Ernst Hauber. I'm a research scientist at the Institute for Planetary Research at the German Aerospace Center in Berlin, Germany. I'm a geologist by training and now focus on surface processes on terrestrial planets.
Okay, so Ernst, let's start at the beginning. How does a little drone helicopter make it all the way from here on Earth to Mars? How did it get there? I'm assuming it didn't fly there.
It didn't fly there by itself, of course. It had to be carried to Mars, and the carrier module, so to say, was the main mission of Mars 2020, which delivers a rover, a big rover, to the surface of Mars. That mission has been launched at the 30th of July last year, and it arrived at 18th of February this year and landed successfully in a crater on Mars. And the Ingenuity helicopter was carried as a piggyback payload on this big mission.
And now we are all waiting for that Ingenuity helicopter to take off, to go on its first flight. Take us through the challenge of that. What is, for you, someone who knows what you're talking about, how hard is it to make this helicopter fly?
There are several big engineering challenges involved in this flight. The first of all, and the foremost of all, of course, is that it has to be completely remotely controlled. And due to the time delay to Mars, Mars is so far from Earth that you can't operate anything with a joystick. The helicopter has to have some autonomy to allow it flying and landing then again safely on Mars. The second big problem is that the surface environment on Mars is completely different than that of Earth. The atmosphere is much thinner and it has a different composition. The temperatures are much colder, which is a problem for electronics, and the gravity is much less than on Earth. This, in turn, is a positive thing for anything that has to fly.
My daughter has a remote control car, and I believe the farthest that the signal can make is 180 feet. And when it's broken, you know, I can go over and check and see what's wrong with it. For a remote control a helicopter that's 30 million miles away, what do you do when something's broken or when something's wrong?
Then you have to first find a solution. You have to program this solution because it can only be a software solution. Of course, you can't fix any hardware on Mars. You have to program a new solution. You have to test then this solution in a test bed on Earth, and only once the test was successful, you can send the newly programmed software to Ingenuity, first of course to the orbiter, then to the rover, then to Ingenuity, where it can be implemented on board the helicopter.
One question I haven't been able to figure out is how it's possible to fly a drone copter on a planet with an atmosphere that's 1% as thick as our atmosphere here on Earth. Now, the reason that confuses me is, you know, when someone's trapped on Mount Everest, which is, what, 29,000 feet high, our helicopters can't go up and get them because the atmosphere is too thin for them to function up there. And so I always thought there was, like, a physical limit to helicopter-style flying, and yet it can work, or how does it work on Mars?
Yeah, that's the big trick. The solution is that you have to increase the speed of the rotor blades. The faster you rotate these blades, the more buoyancy you create, the more upward force you create, and then you can fly. Why that doesn't work at infinitum on Earth, which means, and you are absolutely correct, that you can't fly a helicopter up to an altitude of maybe 8,000 meters, is that you can't increase the speed infinitely on Earth. The limit is that the rotor blades, the speed of the rotor blades shouldn't exceed the speed of sound in the atmosphere, which is a given upper limit, so to say, for helicopter flight, because if you exceed the speed of sound with the rotor blades, you can't steer the rotor anymore. But technicians have figured out that in the thin Martian atmosphere you can fly if you have a rotor speed of 2,400 rounds per minute, which can be done on Mars.
So my son for a while had this little drone, a really cheap thing, looked like a Nintendo figure basically. And when I flew that thing with him up into the air, or when he did it sometimes, once it got kind of high, the wind would just start pushing this thing away from us. And we had to quickly drop it down so that we could, you know, we could get it back again. And that leads me to wonder, because I know Mars has huge windstorms, dust storms ripping through it. And this drone copter is not big. How do you make sure this thing doesn't get blown out of the Jerizo crater out to the other side of Mars?
Absolutely correct. Yes, winds are known on Mars. They can be quite fierce. They are known to move sand dunes. They are known to create big dust storms. So the solution to that possible problem is to monitor the wind speeds with the environmental sensors on the rover, and only start when you, so to say, know the time of day and the conditions when the wind speed is at its minimum.
Ernst, 118 years ago, the Wright brothers flew the length of a football field. And I think I've heard someone from NASA compare Ingenuity's flight on Mars to that event. Is that overblown, that comparison, or how important is this flight that's coming in the next few days for you?
Well, given the importance of flights on Earth, I would say this is part of NASA's PR strategy. You have to make it sound important, of course. But apart from that, which is clearly a message to the media mostly, it is, of course, an important thing for planetary science, because it would be the first controlled motorized flight on another planet. And that, in theory, opens up possibilities for future exploration, because you can imagine that once such a helicopter could do some reconnaissance for future missions, or for the path planning for the rover itself, it could also be used at some point to deliver small payloads to places on Mars where a rover with wheels can't go, or it could even be used in the wildest dreams to pick up samples from places that, again, the rover can't access, to bring them back to the rover and finally maybe even to Earth.
So it's got some practical applications, but it's really not a revolution in space research?
This is a good formulation, yeah. This is what I would call it.
And that was Ernst Hauber talking to us from Berlin there.
Yeah, and that is, we were speaking about the Wright brothers there before, and about the anniversaries of important space dates. There is one right now. 60 years ago was the first human being to enter space, Yuri Gagarin, the Soviet. And this came up a few months ago. My wife was, we were talking about, I don't know why, but the first person to be on the moon. And she said that it was Yuri Gagarin. I was like, what are you talking about? And of course, she was wrong about that. But she was right that Yuri Gagarin is an important person in space flight history. He was the first person.
And he is
in space.
I'm sure that, you know, growing up and going through public education, that there's a line about him somewhere. But generally speaking, his name, at least, Gabe, where you and I grew up.
I did not know that name. When she said that, I was like, no, you mean Neil Armstrong, Adrienne, yeah. Come on.
The one and only.
And she, and for her, growing up in the DDR, she grew up in East Germany. Yuri Gagarin, that was their Neil Armstrong.
Well, of course, but he deserves to be that. I mean, what a risky endeavor to go up and fly.
He was the first one in space.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
No, it is strange. Unfortunately, a lot of you know, the after effects of the Cold War have meant that a lot of really impressive Soviet space flight and research kind of got washed out.
It's an ideological fog that now people don't know about people like Yuri Gagarin now because of that. Politics putting the curtain on history. Yeah.
Here's to more of you out there learning about Yuri and celebrating what he did 60 years ago.
And how about this helicopter?
Well, it's okay. So
let's hope that it takes off.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't get blown away or that there aren't any technical issues. Anything else you'd like to say on space flight or Mars, get in touch with us. We're su@dw.com.
Science Unscripted.